When I was here a few years ago, people said, how come you got that awful photograph of yourself with rats in your teeth? As many of you know, it's because of my lifetime work in helping save endangered squeaking rubber animals, because once that little squeaker is broken, they're silent forever, friends. And that's the reason I'm brandishing a lobster in this year's brochure. It's not a real lobster, because as many of you know, the Crustacean Protection Society has decided that it's inappropriate to take a crustacean out of its natural habitat and force it to take part in a vaudeville show. My wife Jacqueline and I were lucky enough to spend one summer in Stonington, Maine. Stonington is still a working fishing village. It's only a couple of weeks in August when cars get kind of bumper to bumper in a sort of one-lane main street downtown. And as they say, occasionally there's a drive-by shout-in. Well, as soon as we got to town, I do what I always do when I get to a new place. I went down to the library to research local history. And I learned this story from a couple of pamphlets in the Stonington Library. It's about Rufus Bligh. Rufus Bligh was a lobster fisherman who lived in Stonington, Maine from about 1890 to about 1945, 48 or so, and he was famous for a couple of reasons. First was, his lobster catch was always about twice what anyone else's was. No one knew what his method was, but he always had about twice the catch of anybody else. And he was also known as the Singing Lobsterman, because he wrote some beautiful songs. The most well-known of all of his tunes has a chorus. You might have heard it. It goes like this. Haul up me traps, me boys, I've had my fun. Turn and head for the shore. All me lobstering days are all done. I'll go lobstering no more. It was a sad song that he wrote when he had gone lobstering for the last time. And in the local history, they tell this story. Rufus Bligh lived down on Indian Point Road, not far from the house where Jacqueline and I got to stay that summer, only a few doors down. He was a solitary individual. He only went into town, for instance, once a week and never had much of a conversation with anybody, which, of course, is not unusual in Maine, where long conversation sort of goes like this. It goes like this. Folks don't go on and on the way they do in California. I've had a hard time getting used to California. People you don't even know walk up and say, I've just realized that it's not just the way you breathe. It's what you do with your centeredness. It's not like that in Stonington, Maine, no. You ask someone how they're feeling, they go, it's pretty good, I guess, and kind of solid. So the fact that he didn't really talk to anybody very much was not unusual, but he lived all by himself. People worried about him. He was a hermit. They figured he'd never had a sweetheart, never had a girlfriend, never had a wife, never had a companion, but nobody meddled in his business. Well, according to the local legend, one full moon night, Rufus Bligh woke up because he'd had this dream. And in his dream, he saw a beautiful, beautiful woman sitting down on the rocks on the shoreline, combing her hair. And he woke straight up out of that dream, full moon shining in his window, and he remembered what his grandmother had always told him. She said, Rufus, you know, dreams are sometimes not what they seem to be. She said, I know, folks say dreams just some kind of surreal collage of stuff that's happened during the day, and your mind just kind of put stuff together in a random fashion. Not true. Dreams can be clear sight. Dreams can be clear sight right into something that's really happening. And he thought about what she'd said. He thought, well, maybe there really is someone sitting on the rocks down by the shore. And he got up, put his clothes on, went down to the shore of the Stonington Thoroughfare, and there was a woman, identical to the woman in his dream. It was a cold night. He didn't even ask her how she got there. He said, would you want to come on in and get out of the cold? And she said, well, I'd appreciate that. And she spent the night there on his couch, there in the living room. She spent that whole week there. He never asked her where she came from. Well, she moved in, and a year later, they were married. Everybody was so happy locally that, you know, that he had a companion now. They were so happy that they didn't mention some odd stuff they noticed about her. Now, you know, folks in Stonington, Maine, they're not a prejudiced people. but they're an insular people. They don't see a lot of outsiders, and everybody just had to notice that she had the brightest orange skin anyone had ever seen. And then there was her thumbs. She had the biggest thumbs anyone in town had ever seen. And talk went around. They said, "She's a lobster, you know. She's one of the lobster folk. You know, they come out on land. They change shape. Take human shape for 7 years, and they marry a man, then they go back to the sea again." Nobody mentioned it to Rufus because they didn't want to break his heart. And he didn't notice. You know how we don't notice things we don't want to notice? He should have noticed that her skin was bright orange and she had big thumbs, but he just didn't want to see what was right in front of him. Sometimes we're the last to know, and sure enough, 7 years came and 7 years went, and Rufus woke up one full moon night, and the pillow next to his in bed was empty, and there was a trail of seaweed down to the shore. And he went down there to the banks of the Stonington Thoroughfare, and out in the water there, the sparkling, beautiful moonlight, like quicksilver on the surface of the ocean, a great big claw was waving goodbye. His wife had gone back to join her people, and he right then quit lobstering. Didn't want to risk catching his ex, you know, and or any of his kin. Just didn't want any, and he wrote this song. My lobster lassie, I loved her so well. Her eyes was as black as the night. Skin was as red as a sunburn in June, and her green hair was my heart's delight. But without no warning, no word of farewell, she scuttled back to the sea. And all the cetaceans, the clams and crustaceans, can't bring back my lobster to me. Oh, bring back my lobster to me. Bring back my lobster to me. Thank you. And just like that, all the lobsters would scuttle up and clack their claws for applause. Got quite a large listening audience, and every day he'd go down to the shore and sing these dreary, confessional, existential songs, and all the crustaceans, they'd crawl out and they'd all applaud. This went on for months. Till finally this one lobster, this big alpha lobster, crawled right up to him and got in his face and said, "Get a life." You married a lobster, deal with it and move on. I mean, worse things have happened to people. You had 7 good years together. And the lobster, whose name was Harvey, said, "You know, Rufus, you got a wonderful talent, a beautiful singing voice, and I sure love the way you play the guitar, but I know how it is with you artists. You don't have a practical bone in your body. You probably don't even have a decent publicity photograph, let alone business cards. I'll be your manager. I'll take care of all the practical stuff that you artists are incapable of taking care of. Well, I'll set up a national tour for you. You can carry me around in a bucket of water. I'll take care of all the practical stuff." And that's what they did. They formed this wonderful symbiosis, this wonderful partnership, and they toured the United States together. Things went wonderfully, beautifully, till they got to Fisherman's Wharf in San Francisco. When they got to Fisherman's Wharf, Harvey said, "You know, I am sick and tired of all the hard work I've been doing. Do I ever get a fan letter? Is a single check ever made out to me? Does anyone ask for my autograph? No. I do all the hard work, all the booking, all the publicity, all the travel arrangements. You get all the money, all the love letters. I am sick and tired of this. I want to be part of the show." Now, any time management wants to become talent, friends, there's a big problem. But Rufus gave in, and Harvey said, "I just want to play the guitar." So if you'd been there at Fisherman's Wharf, the act looks sort of like this. And again, I apologize that this is not a live lobster, but as I said, crustacean Protection Society. It's another case in which political correctness has trashed an old folk art form. But that's okay. I'm not supposed to say anything political from the stage, so I'm just going to leave it right there. It would have looked like this, anyway. Haul off me traps, me boys, I've had my fun. Turn and head for the shore. People laughed. Here was a case of a new art form, interspecies bonding, creating a new gestalt, a trans-species art form, and people simply laughed. It infuriated Harvey. He said, people are making fun of me. It looks like you're just whacking me on the guitar. I want a more important part in the show. He said, I want to sing, too. Back in those days, lobsters sang before they all fell silent. Problem was, lobsters have no ears. They hear underwater through kind of a sonar device. They can feel vibrations under the water. So the only way that Harvey could know where Rufus was in the song was to be held lightly in Rufus's mouth so he could feel the vibrations coming through Rufus's head. So by the time they got down to Santa Cruz, it looked like this. Now, I'm sorry that there are children in this tent, but there comes a point, no matter how young or old you are, when you have to understand that not all stories end happily. And I have to say what really happened. Rufus was so enthusiastic about how well it was going, he bit Harvey in half. But he was delicious. Rufus, he melted up some butter, dipped him in, and polished him off. And afterwards, he was so overcome with shame about what he'd done that he himself started the Crustacean Protection Society. So I guess we can't be too angry about political correctness and all that. Anyway, if you have wondered to yourself why I don't see more live lobsters in performance, that's the reason for that, and that's why I want to tell this story. It's a pourquoi story. It explains how come you don't see. And thank you very much for your attention. I appreciate it. Thank you.